Chapter 28. By now, I was starting to figure out Dione facial expressions. For example, the way they would draw their lips to a line, showing no teeth, was something like a smile to them. It indicated they were pleased and non-aggressive. "Mortimer," I asked from the doorway, "is everything all right?"
"Everything is well, Alanique," they said. "As well as it can be, considering we aren't flying. Didn't you once say you hated the idea of days off?"
"Yeah," I said.
"I can't prove myself when I'm not flying," Mortimer said. "It leaves me worried. I don't have much time left, but it isn't like I want to have to be forced to fight a Delver. Should I want something catastrophic to occur just so I can prove I'm worth being me?"
"I think like that too," I said, lingering by the door. "Like, I wanted so badly to fly on my home planet that I hoped some kind of attack would happen so I could fight it. But at the same time, I didn't." Mortimer gestured in agreement, then just stood there. I might have been learning their facial expressions, but Dione body language was still hard for me to read. Was Mortimer nervous? What was this about?
"This is awkward, isn't it?" they finally said. "Alanique, I need to talk to you. I need to know, straight out. Is this charade worth continuing?"
I felt a spike of panic. They knew. How could they know? I'd worried about Vapor seeing through my disguise, or maybe a confrontation with Braid, but never Mortimer. I wasn't ready. "Am I worth continuing to train?" Mortimer said. "Is it worth pretending that I belong in the flight? Should I just give up?" Wait. Wait, no. They didn't know about me. I stilled my nerves and forced myself to smile, an expression that made Mortimer wince. Right. Showing teeth was aggressive to them. "You're great, Mortimer," I said honestly. "Really? Considering how long you've been flying, you're an excellent pilot."
"Really?
Really," I said. I hesitated, then stepped out of the building. I didn't want to invite them in, not while I was in the middle of my secret project. "You want to talk? Let's take a walk. You're from the city, right?"
"Yes," Mortimer said.
They seemed more relaxed as they continued.
"Both of my parents lived here all their lives. There's an excellent water garden not far from here. Come, I'll show you."
I locked the door, then tapped a message on my bracelet, using DDF flight code to explain to Embot. "Going on walk, nothing wrong, back soon." Mortimer drew their lips to another calm line, and I noticed that the right half of them was redder than it had been a few days ago. I wondered if that was confirmation that Mortimer was getting closer to being born. Though, was born even the right word? They beckoned me with an understated wave of the hand, the palm up, a Dione gesture distinctly different from the yell or a wave that someone from Detritus might have used. I started along the walkway with them, entering the flood of creatures that were always moving along these streets. The constant presence of all these people made me feel trapped. I'd felt the same way sometimes back in Igneous. That was part of why I'd fled into the caverns to explore. I hated always being surrounded by people, hated walking shoulder to shoulder. Mortimer barely seemed to notice it. They walked beside me, hands clasped behind their back, as if trying very hard to be unassuming. Nobody on the walkway gave the flight suits much of a second glance. Back on Detritus, people noticed pilots and made way for them. Here we were just two more strange faces in a sea of oddities.
"This is good," Mortimer told me. "This is what friends do. Go out together."
"You say that like it's a new experience for you."
"It is," Mortimer said. 2 months of life is not so long, and, well, to be honest, I do not find the process of bonding to be easy. My right parent is very good at it, making friends and talking to people, but that is not an attribute this version of me seems like it will inherit."
"Scud," I said. "I'm going to be blunt, Mortimer. The way you say that hurts my brain. You remember some things your parents knew, but not all of it?"
"Yes," Mortimer said. And the baby I become will remember the same, a mix of both parents, with many holes to fill in with my own experiences. Of course, that mixture might change based on how many times we pupate.
You say that so frankly, I said. I don't like the idea of society modifying someone before they're born.
It's not society, Mortimer said. It's my parents. They simply want to find a personality for me that will have the best chance for success.
But if they decide to try again, instead of having you, it's kind of the same thing as you dying.
No, not really, Mortimer said, cocking their head. And even if it were, I can't really be killed. I'm a hypothetical personality, not a final one.
They puckered their lips, a Dione sign of discomfort.
I do want to be born. I think I would make an excellent pilot, and this program shows that we need pilots, right? So it's not so terrible that maybe a Dione will be born who likes to fight?
It sounds like something your people need, I said, stepping around a flowing creature with two large eyes, but which otherwise looked like nothing so much as a living pile of mud. See, this is the problem. If society is certain that unaggressive people are the best, only those kinds of children get born, and then they perpetuate that kind of thinking. So nobody ever gets born who contradicts the standard. Mortimer looked down.
I heard what you and Hesho said yesterday, on the weights and measures, while we were flying home.
At first, I thought they meant the conversation about hyperdrives, and I panicked for a second, before remembering the earlier one where we'd complained about the superiority and the Dions, their elite, snobby ways, presuming to be above us lesser species.
I know that you dislike the superiority, Mortimer said. You consider working with us to be a chore, a necessary evil. But I wanted you to know that the superiority is wonderful, too. Maybe we are too elitist, too unwilling to look at what other species give us. But this platform and dozens like it have existed for hundreds of years in peace. The superiority gave my parents good lives. It gives millions of beings good lives. By controlling hyperdrives, we prevent so much suffering. There haven't been any major conflicts since the human wars. If a species gets rowdy or dangerous, we can just leave them to themselves. It's not so bad. We don't owe them our technology, particularly if they're not going to be peaceful.
Mortimer led us down several streets, past a multitude of shops and buildings with signs that I couldn't read. I tried not to be overwhelmed by it all, tried not to look like I was watching each and every one of these strange creatures. But I couldn't help it. What secrets did they hide behind those faces that were trying far too hard to pretend to be pleasant? What about people who complain or don't fit with your society? I asked. What happens to them? That person who was protesting out in front of the docks, where are they now?
Exile is the fate of many who make trouble, Mortimer said. But again, do we owe species the right to live on our stations? Can't you focus on all the individuals we're helping instead of the few that we can't figure out how to fit?
It seemed to me that the ones who didn't fit were the most significant, the real measure of what it was like to live in the superiority. Besides, I kept repeating to myself the most important fact, that these people had suppressed and tried to exterminate mine. I didn't know the whole story, but from what Gran-Gran had said, my direct ancestors on the Defiant hadn't taken part in the main war. They'd been condemned simply for being humans, and had been chased until they'd crashed on Detritus. Braid hadn't caused a war, but the superiority treated her like cavern slime. It made it hard to think about the good the government did when I found the exceptions so very blatant. We walked farther, and I kept my arms pulled tight at my sides, because if I bumped someone, they apologized to me. All this false kindness, hiding their destructive ways. All this strangeness.
Even Mortimer himself was an example of it. They were two people who had grown together by pupating, like a caterpillar. Two people imitating a third person. How could I hope to understand such a people as this? I was supposed to act like this was normal? We walked around a corner, passing two Krell. Even still, whenever I saw one of them, the hair stood up on the back of my neck and a chill passed through me. The images of their armor had been used in defiant iconography since before I'd been born. Can you feel them? I found myself asking Mortimer as we passed the Krell. Your parents?
Kind of, Mortimer said. It is difficult to describe. I'm made up of them. In the end, they will decide whether to give birth or whether to pupate and try again. So they're watching, and they're conscious, but at the same time, they are not. Because I am using their brains to think, as I am using their melded bodies to move.
Scud. It was just so, well, alien. We turned around a wall, stepping through an archway into the garden that Mortimer had been leading me to. I froze in place and gaped. I'd been imagining some streams and maybe a waterfall, but the water garden was something far more grand. Enormous, shimmering globs of water, easily a meter across, floated above the ground. They undulated and reflected light, hanging some 2 meters or more in the air. Below, smaller globs emerged from spigots in the ground and floated upward as well, merging or splitting apart. Children of 100 different species ran through the park, chasing the bubble-like chunks of water. It was like zero G, but only for the water. Indeed, when children would catch a glob of water and slap it, it would splash into 1,000 smaller globs that rippled, catching light. I ate lunch in the cockpit each day during training, and was quite familiar with how odd it could be to drink in zero G. I'd sometimes squeeze a glob of water out to hover in front of me, then stick my lips into it and suck it down. This was the same thing, only on an enormous scale. It was gorgeous.
Come, Mortimer said. It's my favorite place in the city. Just be careful. The water might splash on you.
We stepped into the park and followed a path between spigots. The children didn't all smile and laugh. Dione's had their characteristic lax, non-threatening expressions, while other species would howl. One very pink child I passed was making a hiccuping sound. Yet, seeing them together, their joy was palpable. Varied though they were all having fun. How do they do this? I asked, reaching out and tapping a bubble of water as it passed. It shook in the air, vibrating, looking a little like the way the sound of a deep drum felt.
I'm not sure entirely, Mortimer said. It has something to do with specific uses of artificial gravity and certain ionizations.
Mortimer bowed their head. I was pretty sure that was a Dione method of shrugging.
My parents came here often. I inherited a love of the place from both. Here, come sit. See that timer over there? This is the best part.
We settled onto a bench, Mortimer leaning forward, watching a timer on the far side of the park. Most of this ground was a stone patio, without much ornamentation other than pathways of a light blue rock lined with benches. When the timer on the far wall hit zero, all of the water bubbles in the air burst and came crashing down in a sudden rain, which made the playing children squeal and laugh and excitedly call out to each other and their parents. I found the sounds transfixing.
My parents met here, Mortimer said, about 5 years ago. They'd been coming as children for many years, but it wasn't until they were just out of training that they actually started talking to each other.
And they decided to pair?
Well, first they fell in love, Mortimer said.
It was obvious. Of course, the Dione's could love. Even though it was hard to imagine something as human as love existing between these creatures who were so strange. A few Krell children ran past, wearing smaller suits of armor with 2 extra legs, perhaps to make it easier for the young, crab-like creatures to keep balanced upright. They waved arms wildly with excited joy. This is the superiority, I told myself. Those are Krell. They're trying to destroy my people. Stay angry, Spensa. But these children couldn't lie. Perhaps the adults could keep up a charade like I imagined everyone here doing. The children killed that idea. For the first time since arriving, I let my guard drop. Those children were just children. The people walking through the park, even the Krell, weren't all plotting my destruction. They probably didn't even know about detritus. They were people. They were all just people, with strange carapaces or odd life cycles. They lived and they loved. I looked at Mormor, whose eyes were glistening with an emotion that I instantly understood. Fondness. A person remembering something that made them happy. They didn't smile. They made the Dione thin-lipped expression. But it was the same somehow. Oh, saints and stars. I couldn't keep up the warrior act any longer. These weren't my enemies. Some parts of the superiority were, of course, but these people, they were just people. Mrs. Chamwit probably wasn't a spy, but was instead really just a kindly housekeeper who wanted to see me fed. And Mormor, they just wanted to be a pilot. Mormor just wanted to fly, like me. You're an excellent pilot, I told them, really. You have picked up on all this so quickly, it's incredible. I don't think you should give up. You need to fly to prove to the superiority that people like you are needed. Are we, though? Mormor asked. Are we really? I looked up, watching globes of water rise, undulating into the air. I listened to the children of 100 species and their joyful noises. I know a lot of stories, I said, about warriors and soldiers from the Katameek, my people's version of holy books. Embot had been briefing me on terms from Alanik's people that I should try to sprinkle into my conversation. My grandmother would tell these tales to me. Some of my first memories are of her voice calmly telling me about an ancient warrior standing against the odds. Those days are behind us, though, Mormor said. In the superiority, at least. Even our training against the Delvers is just a hypothetical, a plan for something that will probably never happen. All the real wars are done, so we have to plan for the maybe halfway implausible conflicts. If only they knew. I closed my eyes as water splashed down, causing children to squeal. Those old stories have a lot of different themes, I said. One, I never quite understood until I started flying. It happens in the epilogues, the stories after the stories. Warriors who have fought return home, but find they no longer belong. The battle has changed them, warped them, to the point where they are strangers. They protected the society they love, but in doing so made themselves into something that could never again belong to it. That's depressing. It is, but it isn't, all at once. Because they may have changed, but they still won. And no matter how peaceful the society, conflict always finds it again. During those days of sorrow, it's the aged soldier, the one who was bowed by battle, who can stand and protect the weak. You don't fit in, but you're not broken, Mormor. You're just different. And they're going to need you someday. I promise it. I opened my eyes and looked to them, trying to give the Dione version of a smile with lips pressed tight. Thank you, they said. I hope you're right, and yet at the same time, I hope you aren't. Welcome to the life of a soldier. A thought struck me, a stupid one, maybe, but I had to try. I just wish my people could help more. I've been invited to try out as a pilot because some parts of your government recognize that they need us. I think my people could be your people's warriors. Maybe, Mormor said. I don't know that we'd want to put that burden on your people. I think we'd be fine, I said. All we'd really need to know is how to hyperjump. You know, so we could properly protect the galaxy.
Ah, I see what you're doing, Alanique. But there's no use. I don't know how it works. I have no memories from either parent explaining the secret of hyperjumps. Even we aren't told. Otherwise, hostile aliens could just kidnap us and try to get the secret.
I grimaced. I guess I was kind of obvious, wasn't I?
You needn't feel bad, Mortimer said. I'd be worried if you didn't want to know the secret. Just trust me, you don't want it. Hyperjumps are dangerous. The technology is best entrusted to those who know what they're doing.
Yeah, I suppose. We started back, and from my limited ability to read Dione's, I felt like Mortimer's mood was far improved. I should have felt likewise, but each step I took reinforced to me the stark truth I'd finally confronted. We humans weren't at war with an all-powerful, terrible, nefarious force of evil. We were at war with a bunch of laughing children and millions, if not billions, of regular people. And Scud, I'd just talked one of their pilots into staying on the job. This place was doing strange things to my emotions and my sense of duty.
I'm glad you're in our flight, Alanique, Mortimer told me as we stepped up to the embassy. I think you might have the right amount of aggression. I can learn from you.
Don't be so sure, I said. I might be more aggressive than you think. I mean, my people did live with the humans for many years.
Humans can't be happy, though, Mortimer said. They don't understand the concept. Even Braid indicates this is true if you listen to her. Without proper training, humans are just mindless killing machines. You are so much more. You fight when you need to, but enjoy floating bursts of water when you don't. If I prove myself to my family, it will be because I show them that I can be like you.
I suppressed a sigh, opening the door. Doomslug sat on the ledge just inside, impatient for my return. Scud. Hopefully Mortimer wouldn't.
What is that? Mortimer demanded.
They were baring their teeth in a strange look of aggression and hatred. I stepped inside. It's my pet slug. Nothing to worry about. Mortimer pushed into the door in a very forward manner, making me scoop up Doomslug and cradle her, backing away. Mortimer closed the door most of the way, then peeked back out the crack. They spun on me.
Did you get permission to bring a venomous animal into Starsight? Do you have a license?
No, I said. I didn't ask.
You need to destroy the thing, Mortimer said. That's a Tanix. They're deadly.
I looked down at Doomslug, who fluted questioningly. It's not a Tanix, I promised. Different species entirely. They just look similar. I hold her all the time and nothing has happened to me. Mortimer grimaced again. Looking at me holding Doomslug protectively, however, they pushed their lips back to a line.
Just don't show it to anyone else, all right? You could get into serious trouble, even if it's not a Tanix.
They stepped back out the door.
Thank you for being a friend, Alanique. If I should end up being born with a different personality, well, I like the idea of having known you first.
I locked the door after they left.
You shouldn't come down here, I scolded Doomslug. Honestly, how did you even get down all those steps?
I carried her back up to my room, where I put her on the bed, then closed that door and locked it too, for no good reason.
Spencer, Embot said, you're back. What happened? What did they want?
I shook my head and sat down by the window, looking out at all those people. I'd been so determined to see them as my enemies. It had kept me focused. For some reason, though, I found the idea that they were indifferent to be even more frightening.
Spencer, Embot finally said again. Spencer, you should see this.
I frowned, turning toward the monitor on the wall. Embot switched it to a news station.
It showed an image of detritus from space, with a caption underneath. Human scourge, close to escaping its prison.